Hi, everyone, and welcome back for the season 3 premiere of Real Scary Podcast. To the listeners that have been with me from the get-go, welcome back as always. And to those just joining us, thank you so much, and I hope you enjoy. I hope you all had a great winter break and that you're all staying safe. Quickly, I just wanted to say the merch line is now live, so you can find links to the page via my website and through my social media channels. Thank you so much to Alberta-based illustrator and digital designer, Tanis Zach, for designing my logo, and of course, the new design for this season. So today for our premiere episode, I'll be talking about a location in St. Andrews, New Brunswick, that has quite the reputation for paranormal activity. This location is the Charlotte County Archives. I spoke with Heather, who is Archives Manager. Next, I spoke with volunteer and ghost walk host, Felicity, also known as Misdemeanor. She says that this is because you pay her bail and she takes you to jail. She has been doing ghost walks and volunteering her time with the Archives for about 7 years. We have a lot of ground to cover today. I think this is one of the biggest in terms of evidence and stories and just history that I've tackled so far. Now, as an exclusive perk to this episode, the location has provided us with a video tour. This is so cool. So basically, you'll be able to see this location and to hear some of the history and to see sort of what it would look like if you went on a ghost tour with Misdemeanor. This will be available only for listeners of this episode and can be accessed by password through realscarypodcast.ca. So there will be a tab on my website that says exclusive. Click there and you will be asked for a password. I will be revealing the password during this episode, so make sure you're listening carefully and then you'll be able to check that out. Now I have to add, there was a very clear voice caught during this exclusive video. They sent me a clip and it's clearly a woman's voice and saying what sounds like, "Hear me." You will hear Felicity speak in this episode, and it will be quite clear that this is not her voice. This location also comes with a lot of video and photographic evidence, so be sure to check out my blog post for this episode, and you will not be disappointed. Now, without further ado, let's get started. The Charlotte County Archives is located in the old Charlotte County Jail. And next door to this site is the Charlotte County Courthouse. So this location is actually the second jail of Charlotte County. The first one was built in 1786. The town settled only 3 years prior to that. However, the construction of the jail left much to be desired. The building was of wooden construction and had 4 cells on the bottom floor, and a courthouse on the floor above. Now this building was plopped down on its site, and when I say plopped down, I pretty much mean exactly that, directly upon the dirt ground. Turns out that dirt is not that much of a barrier or a deterrent between a prisoner and the freedom of the outside world. And many found that escape was very easy. It came to the point that so many prisoners escaped that the sheriff was actually sued and on the hook for the bill. And this pushed them to create a better jail. A jail that no one would want to be in, number one, and no one could escape from. And so the next jail, known as the Old Jail, and the location of this episode, was built in 1832. When I say they wanted to correct the mistakes of the first jail, I am not exaggerating. The floors and ceilings were made of 1-ton granite bricks. No one was getting out of there, and in fact, though there were a few escapes through the years, none of them were by way of tunneling through granite. Each cell was made with a narrow iron door, And I'm sure the prisoners probably felt very claustrophobic in here. To make the cells feel even smaller, each only had a small opening, 4 inches by 12 inches, to let in some light and air, and in the winter they would be blocked by a wooden plug. There was also a small opening at the bottom of the cell door to allow food to be pushed through. This was obviously not a place that you wanted to end up. And I guess that is the point of a jail. But this jail had another thing going for it. Not only was it dark and cramped, but in the winter it was dangerously cold. In fact, when I spoke with Heather, she said that the archives is seasonal and open by appointment only in the winter for research. There are no tours booked in the winter, and of course, this is a working archives, and this is what they focus on primarily. But if by chance someone does stop by and time permitting, they can always take a look around the cell block. Though Heather said they don't usually stay very long as the temperature is so cold. In fact, I was told that one year a jailer brought in a goose for Christmas dinner and it actually froze to death. Now perhaps this specter goose is what's making webbed footprints that are sometimes seen. The 10 cells on the main floor were used for male prisoners, and on the second floor there were 4 cells that were intended for women, children, and debtors. Yes, I did say children. If a woman was arrested, often her children would come with her. The cells were much more comfortable and likely warmer as well. The jailer and his family would live in a large area upstairs, and there was also apparently an addition at one time, so the area was larger back then. The jailer's wife would be in charge of preparing food, and in the beginning, prisoner meals were pretty meager. They would basically get bread and water. After 1933, they were given one hot meal per week. The old jail was used up until 1979, though there had been protests of inhumane conditions for many years before this. Today, it is home to the Charlotte County Archives and their vast collections. The building has been altered to house the archives, with rooms being converted to offices, and the second floor cells being transformed into climate-controlled storage for the archives. The cells on the main floor, however, remain in their original condition. The courthouse, which remains next to the old jail, is a beautiful building, designed by Thomas Berry and built in 1840. It was the oldest courthouse in continuous use until 2017. It is a National Historical Site and Provincial Heritage Place. There were hangings that took place here, with the last one occurring on December 16, 1942. Misdemeanor mentioned to me that often the gallows would be burned after each use, as it was seen as tainted wood. But in this case, the actual gallows from the last hanging were found underneath the judges' chambers in the old courthouse and are now on display at the end of the cell block in the jail. So like I said, there were hangings that were carried out at this location, and two of the most notable were Thomas Dowd and Thomas Hutchings. The murder case against Thomas Dowd and Eliza Ward seemed to be a pretty sensational one for the time. They were tried and convicted of the murder of Eliza's husband, Thomas Ward. Yes, Thomas appears to be a very popular name at the time. Thomas Ward was a farmer who lived a, quote, unhappy life with his wife, who was much younger than himself. That was written in a newspaper article at the time. Thomas Dowd stayed at the Ward home as a boarder and is supposed to have started up an illicit affair with Eliza. And as we know from episodes in the past, and sometimes in the present, I guess, this usually does not end well. And it was believed that Dowd and Ward had some increasing tensions. On September 9th, Thomas Ward would disappear, only to be discovered poorly concealed under a bush in a nearby meadow. Witnesses told of seeing Thomas Ward leaving to cut grass in the meadow. Thomas Dowd was seen leaving shortly after in this same direction, returning around 10 a.m. Ward did not return. Dowd took a lunch and left again, He and Eliza were seen returning to the house from the direction of the meadow some hours later. Thomas Ward was immediately arrested, and Eliza apparently gave too many conflicting statements, thus earning her a charge of accomplice to murder. The trial was purely based on circumstantial evidence, and most likely, if this case was tried today, it would have had a very different outcome. The injuries suffered to the victim were blows to the head by a suspected broad axe, and Dowd apparently owned such a weapon, though most of the people at this time did. It was said that he did sell his axe the morning after the murder, and it was noted as having stains that looked to be blood and hairs attached to it. The axe and Dowd's clothing were given to an expert to examine. Now, of course, testing at this time in forensics was quite different than it is now. But from there, it was determined that two of the stains on his clothing were in fact blood, but could not be determined as to whether or not it was from a human or an animal. The analysis of the axe showed the short hairs that were found were that to be of a human, and the staining on the axe that looked like blood was concluded to be most likely rust, but not blood. The trial saw many witnesses who had large gaps in their memories, and they didn't seem to consider any other potential perpetrator. For example, another man who would testify as a witness by the name of Daniel McCarthy. He was also boarding at the Ward house and had also just been kicked out of the home by Ward. He was never considered. The trial concluded with both prisoners being found guilty, and on November 20th, 1879, Dowd gave a confession. He said that he did kill Ward. He dragged his body to that gully, and that Mrs. Ward knew nothing of it and didn't see her husband until the body was found. Many believe that Dowd did this because he found out that Eliza was pregnant, and it was rumored that this was their love child. So was this all true? Was he just trying to save her and their unborn child from the gallows? There were even some to suggest that the very fact that Thomas Ward was simply just covered in moss and rotting wood, that it must have been Eliza. She was pregnant and a woman and incapable of burying him on her own. But sadly, we will just never know for sure what happened. Eliza Ward would not be hung. She had a sentence of 7 years, and in an article from the Bay Pilot, on the day of execution, it stated that Dowd signed a petition to have her sentence commuted, as she was innocent in the matter. She watched as Thomas was hung over the door of the jail from the second floor window. She was noted by a local newspaper as crying bitterly before returning to her cell. There is a rumor that years later, when she passed away, that family members found a written confession from Eliza stating that she committed the murder and that Tommy had no part in it. Many believe this to be true and that Tommy Dowd remains at the jail to this day. So there was an interview transcript that Misdemeanor sent to me from an interview done with a man named George. George's father was the jailer from the time George was about 8 years old. He lived at the jail with his family, and when his father passed away, George remained at the jail and was in charge for a while. He definitely witnessed some strange things. As a child, he said that he and his brother shared one of the rooms, and that a light would come on and off inside of the closet. The strange thing was, there was no light in there. He said that it happened multiple times, and they would be way too scared to sleep in there. I don't blame him. The next story that he had was tied to Tommy Dowd specifically. He tells of how the second cell on the right was Dowd's death cell, and how numerous people had seen a light in there, moving very deliberately along the wall, almost as if it wanted to spell something out. Some say that the light writes out innocent. George had a prisoner in the cell who had told him that he saw this light, so they blocked off every part of the cell, confident that there would be no light able to get inside. He and the prisoner witnessed a light the size of a dime going across the wall, just as described. George said that he couldn't explain this. And from what I understand, there haven't been eyewitnesses to this phenomenon since about the 1940s or 1950s. I was sent a magazine article from the Atlantic Coast Guide, 2016. There was a full-paged article covering the ghost walk, and it says that there is a rumor that Dowd scrawled, "I am innocent," on the cell wall in blood. Very interesting. The last hanging that took place here was 21-year-old Royal Air Force Sergeant Thomas Roland Hutchings, convicted of raping and murdering 19-year-old Bernice Connors between 11 p.m. on June 5th, 1942 and 1 a.m. June 6th, 1942. Bernice had attended a dance at the community hall in Black's Harbor. She left the dance at intermission with Thomas Hutchings and never returned. Her family believed she had visited a friend, and the friend assumed that she went home after the dance. So she was actually not reported missing until the Sunday evening, which would have been the 7th. RCMP officers found Bernice's body under a mossy heap along Dead Man's Harbor Road. The details about how she was found are pretty horrific. There were signs of a struggle in the area around where she was eventually found, and it was surmised that she had been bludgeoned to death. Hutchings was seen by witnesses leaving the dance at 11:30 and not returning until more than an hour later. He had blood on his face and a cut on his hand. He said that he had been in a fight with another man and that he had cut his hand a few days prior. He was arrested on the 11th and pleaded not guilty. From there, he was remanded to the jail. On October 5th, the 12-man jury found him guilty and actually requested that mercy be shown to the accused. The court, however, ignored this request, and Thomas Hutchings was sentenced to hang on December 16th, 1942. These are the very gallows that remain today. In that same interview I mentioned earlier from the previous jailer's son and jailer himself later, George told of something strange from the time of Hutchings' death. He even talks about how he and some of the other men were actually the ones to construct the gallows for his hanging. He said that the entire summer he would hear a bell ringing. He likened it to a doorbell covered in cloth, and they could not find out where this sound was coming from. He had arranged for a prisoner to be brought in the evening, and he said that the bell would ring on and off that night, causing him to get up, thinking that they were there. But no one was. And again, he had no explanation of how this could be. So now that you know the history of this location, or at least some of it, it is a vast history. Let's get into the stories from this location. And I can't stress enough, check out the blog for this episode. There's a lot of evidence. As I mentioned, I spoke with the archives manager, Heather. She's been working at the archives since 2020. And had known about the ghost tours run by Misdemeanor, but wasn't completely familiar with the specific stories. Heather says that she's always been kind of skeptical, though interested in the paranormal. But she had never had her own experiences. Her opinion on the paranormal has certainly changed since working here. So let's take a listen to what she's been experiencing lately.
Recently, I have been hearing a lot of strange noises up in the attic. There was one day, a couple weeks ago, very clearly there were heavy footsteps up in the attic going back and forth above my head for a few minutes. And since then, I've been hearing other noises up there, sounds like scraping and dragging. And there have been doors that have slammed downstairs that I know I've closed myself personally. Nobody's down there. Outside door isn't open. There's no wind coming through. There's no reason for that door to have slammed. On Christmas Eve, there were a lot of banging coming from downstairs. Again, nobody down there. So it's a lot of strange noises like that.
She said that pretty much every day of the week, something strange will be going on. Next, I spoke with the volunteer and ghost walk host, Misdemeanor. And just like Heather, she is lovely and super knowledgeable about the history of the area. But of course, hers gravitates towards the paranormal. As an aside, I would be a horrible ghost guide. I love the history and the stories, but I would be telling them and then standing outside waiting for everyone to go in and have a peek around the scary place for fear of actually experiencing something. So Misdemeanor, however, is fearless. She said that she is the only one who will come in at night. So she works with paranormal groups that do come in for investigations. The comments left by people who have been on her tours and who have worked with her in the past are nothing less than glowing. And from interactions that I've had with her, I completely understand why. She's so much fun and a wealth of spooky stories. If you have the chance to visit this beautiful place, please check out her tours. And I will have all of the pertinent information linked on the blog, of course. So let's listen to a few of her stories that she told me.
Most of the activity in the jail after the ghost walks, especially when you've got high numbers in, the more people in that very small jail, and it is incredibly small, the more the activity is afterwards. Back on July 26th, I was doing a ghost walk, and I used to start from the big hotel, go to the dead center of St. Andrews, as I call it, and that's the graveyard, the lawyer's burial ground, and then over to the jail and the courthouse. And one lady, we were in the courthouse in the judge's chamber, and the lady looked down on the floor, and she was like, hang on a moment, that's my necklace. Now, it wasn't a length of a necklace that could slip off her head if she bent down. So she's like, okay, what's going on? The catch was still on there. So she wrote about it on TripAdvisor. She put very interesting and enjoyable. My cousin had her necklace come off not once, but twice. 10 minutes later, they'd done exactly the same thing. So the local newspaper picked up the story because everybody was talking about it. So they sent out a reporter. And I laughed because I said, oh, that's a very nice crucifix and we're going into the jail. They're going to like that. No sooner has we been in the jail for 10 minutes, the lady herself had her crucifix come off. And again, the actual patch was still on her. And again, it was a short length. She couldn't have bent over and it fallen off her head. That was impossible. I've had people have earrings taken out of their ears. And one paranormal group came here, and they actually came here 2 years in a row, exactly to the date. It wasn't planned that way. In fact, we didn't even realize until it was over. One of the investigators, she was sat in the cell, and a very tight, snug ring fell off her finger. She couldn't get it back on.
So something interesting that came about after these specific stories is that the following week, when I spoke with them again, Heather revealed that she had never actually heard about the necklaces coming off. And when she did hear these stories, she connected them to an experience of her own. One day while working, her necklace fell off, but just like in Misdemeanor's stories, the clasp was still intact. I believe she said she was standing at a filing cabinet. Misdemeanor laughed, just saying, there were a lot of thieves here. It makes sense. I guess they're still up to their old tricks. For those of you who follow me on Facebook, you may have seen my post about having my first paranormal experience connected to a location. Well, this is that location. So I'm going to let Misdemeanor tell you about another incident, and I will then tell you what I experienced.
The group reported, now this is what was in the Moncton paper. The group's most recent investigation was at the old jail in St. Andrews this past June. Some of the group slept in the jail cells and some in the hallways about only a foot away of what used to be the execution gallows. It was here that Doth White, that's the head of the paranormal team, said that she heard some very strange noises.
I was walking with one of our team members and we heard a growl right between us, she said. It sounded like a dog guarding its food and it was right in between us. There was nothing that could explain that noise. My reply was, keep calm and growl on. I had heard it several times before. People have heard it.
So I also did ask her about whether or not she felt like this was a bad spirit or malevolent, and here's what she had to say.
I don't think the thing that growled doesn't mean any harm.
Right.
I think it's trapped here.
So when I was talking with Miss Demeanor and Heather a week after our interviews, I had a strange experience. Now, of course, I wasn't recording, and I know, rookie move on my part, and one that I will not repeat, I'm sorry. But twice during the conversation, I heard a growl. So I was completely alone in my home. It was silent. Both of my cats were asleep. But regardless of that, I could tell that the growl came from the computer anyway, not on my end, not around me. So neither Heather, who was sitting closer to the computer, nor Miss Demeanor seemed to hear it. So the first time it happened, I sort of just thought, okay, you know, must not have been anything. So my fear of embarrassing myself kept me from saying anything. But the second time it happened, it was almost like whatever was making that noise was saying, no, you hear it. So it nagged at me for the next day or so. And I grappled with what it could have been and whether I should say anything or not. So I actually was texting with my favorite co-host, Brianne, and she said, no, you have to say something. So I did and confirmed that neither of them had heard anything. Miss Demeanor said that it did not surprise her and to keep in mind that the spirits there are aware of what's happening. They know that we're talking and we're doing these things, and that this is them acknowledging the conversation. Now, I will also say, it was, of course, like a little creepy when I thought about it, but when it happened, I didn't feel threatened. I didn't feel like it was evil. Miss Demeanor told me of a time during a paranormal investigation that she asked a question about what was making the growl. So here's that clip.
We go into Thomas Dowd's cell, and the growling had just happened. So the team said to me, is there anything you want to ask? And I went, oh, yeah. I said, could you tell me what makes the growling in here? And it came right back. I could hear it. And it came across the screen on the obelisk.
Mm-hmm.
Wolf. And with that, the temperature dropped. Even when I talk to you about it, I have a feeling going up and down my spine. I have never been so cold.
Mm.
And everybody felt something in that jail cell.
And there is actually a clip of this exact moment and also an image of what she believes is the wolf figure. So both of those will be up on the blog and labeled, so you'll be able to quickly find it. In my correspondence with Heather, she told me of another story of something creepy that happened to her. She says that this was one of the first things that made her acknowledge that something was going on here. She had her headphones on while in the office one day, but didn't actually have anything playing. All of a sudden, they started crackling and she heard a woman's voice. Very distant, she said, and she could barely make out words, but thinks that she was calling for help. When the voice began to get closer and louder, she threw her headphones away, which I have to laugh because this is exactly to a T what I would have done. So I took that story in and continued my research the following day when I came across this story. In an article from the Standard newspaper, May 13th, 1835, the jailer and deputy sheriff at the time was Captain Snow. His wife had gone down to check on the prisoners. It was a cold night and she sat next to the fire. It's believed that she fell asleep and caught fire, tragically. Her family was awoken by her screams, and they ran to aid her as fast as they could, but she did end up passing from her injuries. So when I read this, I immediately thought of Heather's story and made a little mental note to ask her about this. but she beat me to it. A couple of days later, she emailed me about some more historical information and said, in reference to her story, that it did take a long time for her to go back to headphones after that day. And she said, I quote, "I have to add, I was not familiar with the story of the jailer's wife and fire, but now I am, and it makes me wonder if it was her." I emailed her right back and told her that I had discovered the story and thought the exact same thing. There is a woman that has been seen in photographs. Misdemeanor sent one to me, and I will have that up on the blog for you to see. There's also a very interesting video that she sent me. This took place in the courthouse, and again, I will put that up on the blog. It's very short. You can hear people chatting, and someone is just taking a video, sort of panoramic shot around the courthouse. So Misdemeanor was there, and there's a few other people, and they're looking through some things, and suddenly you hear a woman's voice in a strong English accent saying, "Get your knife." And it's loud. It sounds like there's even a bit of an echo inside the building from the voice. No one flinches. No one stops what they're doing. You hear them basically talking while it's happening. And it wasn't until the video was played back that it was heard. And of course, no one heard that. So you'll definitely have to check that out. It's really, really interesting. The next story that Misdemeanor told me has a photo to go with it. And it gave me the chills. It's so crazy, so clear, and it's one of those things that when you see it, you can't unsee it. So let's listen to her story.
Last year, I was doing a ghost walk, and afterwards, I noticed I had left my lantern on the table in the hallway of the jail. So I was like, oh no, I've got to go back in there. I'll go in and get it. And I'm on my own. But I notice a red light between the slats of the gallows. Now, these are the gallows from Last Man Hung. So they've got a lot of energy to them. I'm like, what is that? So I take a picture and I start zooming in. It's a man holding a rope. I belong to a professional ghost walk group. Mm-hmm. And the gentleman down in Key West, I showed him the picture. And he sent it back, and he said, "That's the last of your worries. Have a look by your lantern." I couldn't see it. So I agreed to let him have the photo. He sends it back. There's a man sat right on the steps, right by my lantern.
So, yeah. And I know this is a podcast, which makes it difficult to get the full effect of the image. So I do hope you'll check it out, because it is quite something to see. It is one of the clearest images I've ever seen. As for the other person she saw, the man behind the gallows holding the noose, he has been seen by others as well. I would guess that this is Tom Hutchings, as these are the gallows that he met his end on. Another thing I wanted to add is that she never discloses when there are investigations going on, so they don't have the possibility of people coming in and tainting the results. So that's something to remember as well. There are so many stories and personal experiences, I don't think I could include all of them here. And perhaps the people closest to the location don't even know all of the stories that have happened themselves. There are instances of lights turning on and off on their own in the courthouse. And in fact, I have another video of that happening. You can tell no one around seems to notice or take note of it. That will also be up on the blog. I'll also link an episode of a show called Ghost Cases. It's on YouTube. You can check out the episode on this location, and the host used a trigger item in Hutching's cell, a noose, and felt a cold sensation wrapping around his neck. He wasn't aware until after that this is actually something people have experienced in the past. There have been reports of seeing people in the windows, even though said windows were blocked up. I read the findings report from the Greater Moncton Paranormal Society, and I will post a link to their video of the investigation. Many things happened during their investigation. Noises, EVPs, voices, growling, heard in real time. So not just things heard when they listened back to tape, but heard actually happening. The thing that I love about this place is that with so much happening, And like Heather said, every day there's something going on. Everything seems to be connected and consistent. This is such an amazing location, and I know that I personally cannot wait to visit. Traveling is hard at the moment, but I truly hope that if you're listening to this, that you will put this on your haunted road trip roster. It's a must visit. Make sure to check out that exclusive video that this amazing team made for us. You can access it through my website by entering the code Charlotte, CHARLOTTE, County, CONTY, all one word, no capitals. Another really cool thing that they're going to be doing is releasing some videos through the year on notable dates pertaining to different stories. So we will definitely be hearing more from the Charlotte County Archives and Misdemeanor, which is great. Please be sure to give a follow and a like to Charlotte County Archives and Ghost Walks of St. Andrews by the Sea, NB, on Facebook. You can also find the Charlotte County Archives on Twitter at CCArchives1. I will also be linking the Archives website and YouTube channels on this episode's blog, and of course the Twitter handle and everything I mentioned. So let's talk about that blog. Like I've been saying, beating you over the head with, it is packed full of documents, photos, videos, and I can't even take credit for this entire episode because pretty much all of the documentation was compiled and sent to me by Misdemeanor, as well as Heather. They were amazing. Misdemeanor also contacted paranormal teams and people who have had experiences to ensure that we could use their evidence. So thank you so, so much to her. Thank you so much to Heather. You guys are the best. That being said, remember you can now get your Real Scary merch. Just head over to my website at realscarypodcast.ca and click on the heading merch. Follow me on Facebook and Instagram at Real Scary Podcast. And feel free to email me at realscarypodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, this is your friendly neighborhood host, Elise.